Welcome to MGO Podcast 10.5. One shout out to Gus Johnson for calling Joe Gaziano the Gaz. Get the medium Wayne wrapping.
Sorry, I was busy with other things.
That's my alter ego.
Should we take a break and go to commercial?
What? Oh. Yeah, let's do that. Let's go to commercial. All right, we're back. Thanks for tuning in. Now it's time for another commercial. All right, we're back. And now we're going to read our list of sponsors. Our sponsors are Underground Printing, the Bostor, Peak Wealth Management, Homeshire Lending, the University of Michigan Alumni Association, the Residents in Ann Arbor Downtown, Ann Arbor Elder Law, Human Element, Michigan Law Grant, and Lantana Hummus. And possibly the District Library. They're in, they're out, we don't know.
we don't always get updated lists.
And now it's time for... No, we're actually going to do a podcast now. Sorry about that, people. We have like an hour and a half worth of content, and you get three commercial breaks. So
that's pretty good.
It's good.
I like that ratio.
How much content did you get before three commercial breaks in this game? 6 minutes.
Did you have a stopwatch going?
Well, I just go by the game clock.
I feel like we need to have you with some sort of stopwatch, and you can, especially maybe on like a Rutgers game, where you can have like two stopwatches going. One is like actual time, one is game time.
Well, so I know time. I mean, I know how much time is actually in the commercials, because when you go get the copy of the game that doesn't have the commercials in it after when you're going to go do your charting,
right,
that's like an hour and 15 minutes shorter than the actual game time.
Man, an hour and 15 minutes, I feel like that would be short.
Well, it's halftime that's okay. Also in there. So there's, but halftime is just all ads, and it's 20 minutes specifically because they wanted to put more ads in halftime. So when they were going to like, oh, how do we shorten these games? Somebody was like, let's make a 15-minute halftime, which every game except college football has.
Yeah.
And they were like, nah.
Nah. There's too much money.
And in this one, this game started at like 4:50. So they just had 20 minutes of like, look at Dave Wonsett for 30 seconds, and now here's more commercials about trucks. I'm buying a car, and I'm specifically, I'm not buying anything that advertises on the college football.
You are buying a car?
Yeah.
I thought we had a conversation before where you were thinking about maybe... Oh, you were thinking about maybe buying one car and then...
Well, yeah, we're just... Well, so we're... The car is dying.
Okay.
It's
as they do.
It's making old man sounds. And so we gotta get a new car, and I think it's gotta be like a Subaru or something, because they don't advertise on college football.
So no Ram trucks?
No Ram trucks in this house. No goddamn Buicks. God.
Now that song is running in my head. It's your favorite song.
The worst. The worst. But
we should talk about some football.
Sure, let's talk about some football. So Michigan beats Northwestern 20-17 in a very B-pone game.
Yeah. So I was thinking about this on the drive home, and I was like, when was the last non-weird Northwestern game?
That is a good point. So the last Northwestern game was actually the Moon game.
It was not. The last Northwestern game was the defense game.
The defense game.
Yeah, it's when the third game in 2015 where Michigan shut out opponent.
Oh,
the last 30 seconds.
Well, that Michigan wasn't State. Weird.
You're right, it wasn't.
So
that was the.
But most of them get weird.
Yeah, before that was the kind of exception. But before that, 14 was the Moon game. 13 was the fire drill field goal game.
Right.
12 was the should have been intercepted, but Roy Rountree catches it
game. Roy Rountree game, God.
11, they were down like 10 at halftime and came back, storming back in the second half. It was a night game at Evanston.
Yeah.
2008 was the fandom experience game with all of the awfulness. And then 7 was Henny's injury and Mallett that Michigan never really took control until probably... third-ish quarter. So it was a 50-50 game there.
Yeah.
At Northwestern. 6 was a rain game. That was at Michigan State. Michigan was never in any trouble, but it was an uncomfortable experience. So it's been a while.
It was clear that after the first little bit here that this was going to be one of those Northwestern games. But, I mean, if you look at the stats in this game, it's total yardage is 376 to 202. And if you had asked me before the game, that's exactly what I would have told you. Down to the 202, I would have been like, you know, they're going to get kind of a...
They'll get some plays.
They're going to get over 200 yards on a horse crap final drive. And that's what happened, except it was a 20-17 game instead of what those numbers kind of imply.
Yeah.
And the number one reason for that was Michigan, you know, kicking 21 and 24-yard field goals.
Yeah.
And the main reason for that was some, what are you doing? Like, they have second and goal on the three. And I've been acclimated to Harbaugh football. And so what I expect and what I want is up to three fullback dives that end up in the end zone.
Especially after what happened against Nebraska.
And you have...
let's give it to Mason.
You have Ruiz. You have Mike Onwenu. You have the big boys.
The big boys.
You have Juwan Bushel-Beatty.
Yeah.
You have
five guards on the field.
You have Ben Mason.
Yeah.
You have the big, big boys. And it's just like, just Mason it into the end zone from the three. There's no reason not to do that until someone can stop it.
Sure.
And I don't think Northwestern, although they have a very nice front seven, is going to be the team to stop it. So I was just like, what do you, I mean, they go under shotgun and they expose, Caron Higdon to, they run a split zone and the Northwestern defensive end just dives under it and jams it up in the backfield. And that's something that can't happen when you're in a goal line formation because that guy just has to come from so far away.
Yeah.
So I didn't get that. And then, of course, the next play is a attempted fade in the end zone to Grant Perry, which is missed.
That was the third down. Yeah, it was the third down.
Yeah, and also not at, I don't know, Zach Gentry, Donovan Peoples-Jones, Nico Collins.
Someone who's slightly taller than Grant Perry.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't think that any of those guys are rescuing that call. It's just I don't get it, man.
Yeah. Like you said, the interesting thing was that Mason ended up having like two carries or something today, and he had, what, I don't know, two per drive for a couple of drives last week. And it seems like if you're going to run inside the 10.
They had that earlier sequence where it's like third and two, and they throw a wide receiver screen.
Was that a long wide receiver screen? It seemed like that was like maybe from the far hash, and so it took a while for the ball just to get out there.
And it's third and two, so they're primed to go get that screen.
No one's playing 10 yards off on third and two.
Right.
Yeah.
And then on the fourth down ensuing from that, they run a power play, and they pull Mike Onwenu.
Mm-hmm.
And Patty Fisher, his specialty is just running at people really fast and blowing them up on power plays. He led the country last year in run stuff percentage. So 16% of the time opponents ran against Northwestern last year, he ended up getting a tackle in the backfield or for 0 yards. So
that might be,
that's how they play. They just run really hard at everything. And if you can't handle it, then you can't handle it. And you have Mike Onwenu, who's got his assets, but he's not the speediest guy in the world. So it's just like, you're just asking for it.
Yeah.
And so they get, and I'm just like, what are you doing? Where is the Ben Mason? We have to be the only fan base in America that is like, where is the fullback?
Well, I mean, since what, 2015, since Harbaugh got here, you had Sione Huma,
right,
who we kind of fell in love with, and then Khalid Hill took over that role, and what, Vulture touchdowned his way into the NFL. And so, yeah, I mean, we kind of have the next third generation of this.
And he looks like a really good
And this
good
guy
option.
Might be, he might be on a different level.
As like an angry person you can't tackle ever, yes.
Yeah, a guy who you could, he might even get hit. I think he did have a conversion, maybe a third down conversion
when
he gave it to him, and he got hit. I think he was short, and he just pushed everybody forward.
That's correct. And so, he had two short yard carries in this game, both of them successful.
Right.
And it's like, until that doesn't work,
we should revisit
that. Just keep doing it.
Yeah.
There's no reason to do anything else.
So a couple spread zealots sitting here clamoring for more fullback.
More fullback! More fullback. That's a lot of complaining about play calling.
Yeah. We have to complain about something.
I think those are completely valid complaints.
Like, no, I think
so too. The third and two screen is just like, that shouldn't be even an option. I think James Light was saying that that's probably a pre-snap read that is like just part of the package play. And I'm like, I don't know that should be. I mean, on first and 10, sure, go with that. Like,
yeah.
If it feels open, go throw it. But on third and two, it's like, just put in the fullback, man. All right, we've covered that.
can move on from this now.
We can move on from this now.
Okay.
So Michigan has a really rough start in this game, in part because Shea Patterson can't find anybody downfield. Like, we were all terrified that the Gaz was going to dominate the game, and he didn't really. He had a couple of nice plays.
Yeah.
But it's not like he was in the backfield every time. And when asked to pass protect, Michigan's tackles pretty much got the job done.
Yeah. I thought that was going to be my hot take of this podcast was we've passed another test at Pass Pro where it seems like the last few weeks we've kind of ratcheted up who we're pass protecting against.
Yeah.
And we've gotten to the next level. And I thought they looked really good in pass protection. The first sack the first sack of the game on the first drive was definitely a coverage sack.
Yes.
And I think
virtually all of
the guys got him again at later on in the game. I think he beat Runyon, and that was mostly the extent of the scary pressure that they put on.
Yeah.
And aside from that, I didn't see much else.
And that's an extremely acceptable performance against a team that has a star defensive end. But Patterson was kind of in two parts here. One, I don't think he felt like he was going to get that protection.
Okay.
So early in the game, he was like his timer was going off, and he had a clean pocket.
And didn't have to.
Yeah, it didn't have to. And then the other thing is, for whatever reason, Michigan receivers were rarely getting open. I haven't seen everything, and there, like, this was not a Rick game, despite it being on Fox. So there weren't really many useful replays of anything whatsoever,
all
which
right.
is disappointing. I don't know if that's because it's at Northwestern or what, but the
not quite as many angles for cameras and such.
Well, you know, they have that pass that goes by Collins's head.
Yeah.
And the only replay they have of that is like a ground level view in the end zone where it's like,
yeah,
after it goes by the relevant players, and like, that's useless.
Now, so, speaking of third down calls.
Well, I mean, if Nico Collins reaches up for a football that's thrown to him, maybe that seems better. Like, right?
That would get my vote, I guess.
I have a Collins section a little bit later.
That's
so
fine.
We're gonna get to this. Is just, I mean, Northwestern is a heavy zone team. They don't do a lot of man to man, and I don't know if they were just matching Michigan's routes really precisely or what, but it just kind of felt like Patterson would drop back, he'd survey, he wouldn't find what he wanted, and then he'd have to go do something else. And Northwestern was really good at constricting his ability to have those improv plays.
Yeah.
Like you had, you know, that Gentry conversion on third down where he comes back to the ball, but there really wasn't much else where Patterson was able to break the pocket.
No, the few times late that he broke the pocket, he pulled it down and ran. It wasn't like he was getting out and then hitting a guy.
Right. And I think we saw a little bit of Patterson's potential as a runner. I mean, we have the 21-yard scramble, not scramble, zone read, that ends with the worst holding call of all time.
Yes.
We need to explore this. I think this is literally the worst. Are we playing this card now? Yes, I think this is literally the worst holding call in the history of football. Like, there have been worse incidents of ref malfeasance in college football.
Probably, yeah.
So, like, the like Oregon-Oklahoma onside kick.
Okay.
But if we are restricting it to just holding calls and not, like, accounting for the situation, but just, like, what is the holding call that was...
Like, what are you seeing?
What are you seeing?
Yeah.
This has to be it. Because not only do they call it on Caron Hegden, but if you look at the rest of the offensive line, nobody's holding anybody.
No. And there was some debate in the press box about, oh, maybe it's Gentry. And then we all watched the replay of Gentry, and nobody could come up with anything because he ended up on the ground.
Right. And it's so bad that, like, one of the analysts that does the refereeing stuff, I think it was Dean Blandino, was like, oh, the ref just got the team wrong on that. And I was like, what?
So it should have been defensive holding? Is that what they're saying? That he tackled Higdon
That's the best he could come up with.
I mean, that would be remotely plausible.
Even I think that should just be.
Oh yeah.
You faked giving him the ball. He got tackled. That's.
Well, isn't the rule like, is he in the backfield? Like, if you cross the line of scrimmage, you can't do that. But you can throw a guy down the backfield.
No, you can't hold a guy in the backfield.
Okay.
But you can like bump into them. There's no such thing as pass interference in the backfield. There is holding.
Sure.
So like Bush got a holding last week.
Okay.
Because he got there too fast on a screen. because it was like, you know, Hutchinson like leapt up in the passing lane and the quarterback decided not to throw it right away.
Yeah.
And then by the time that he'd thrown it, Bush had basically tackled the guy already. So they threw a holding call. And that's a legit call.
Okay.
But
this one.
This one. Not so much. And that we that's like a, that was a 31-yard swing.
Yeah.
So that's that, and that is a huge in a game where Michigan is trying to catch up, trying to come back, and they basically end that drive that was just about to be first and 10 on like the Northwestern
40 or something. Yeah. No, but we've seen Patterson be able to now use his legs like on the zone read.
Well, and when he decides that he's actually going to go, he's a threat. And I don't want to see Michigan do that a lot.
No.
But I think they did pull it out at a good time against Northwestern.
Well, and he pulled the ball down late, like I said earlier, a few times where he scrambled to pick up first downs on third downs or put them in short yard situations. And, I mean, that's something that we haven't seen in years. And it's his scrambling is not... I mean,
Devin Gardner.
Okay, I mean, that's 5 years ago, 4 years ago now.
Well, yeah, but... I mean, in years isn't like...
All right. Well, maybe it's felt like that. Is that fair?
Okay.
So, but the last thing I want to say about Patterson doing that is it's not like, you know, a Peyton Manning or a Tom Brady pulling the ball down and just seeing if he can get there and you're just kind of hoping. Like, you see Patterson start to pick up speed when he breaks away and he's running at or better than the speed of offensive linemen and linebackers.
Yeah,
he's moving. Yeah. So it's like an actual asset and not kind of like something you're hoping to get away with.
Right. It's not like when John Navarre runs for like 50 yards against Iowa.
Exactly.
And you're like, what did I see?
Yes. It's something that is repeatable.
Yeah. It's just that, you know, kind of feels like neither Michigan nor Patterson really wants to repeat it very much.
Well, he
doesn't really want to run the ball.
No, I think he thinks he can throw it. And I think that might have been a little bit of his issues early on in the game is that I think he saw a few options in the short yardage passing game and wanted something a little bit bigger.
Sure.
There were a few times that we were kind of discussing that, and I thought, he might be able to make that throw, but I think he was thinking, I might be able to get something a little bit farther downfield.
Right. And he did have kind of a rough... overall performance. Like he's got that throw on 3rd and 11 to Collins that Collins has to bat down because it's
over the middle.
Yeah, over the middle.
Yeah.
And he just had kind of these overthrows, like he overthrows Grant Perry, and Grant Perry did have some separation there and had an opportunity, but he just pretty badly misses it. And there were just a couple other throws where he's had a downfield success rate of 74, 77, 77
consistently.
I don't think he's going to hit that this game or really get that close.
Yeah, the word that I had written down in my notes was inconsistent because it wasn't that he had a bad game in terms of he didn't do anything well. He missed a number of throws for the first time that we really seen him do that, but he also hit a few throws that were pretty like, dang, man.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know how I feel about the Eubanks completion downfield.
Well, that had to be a route combination mix-up, right?
Yeah, and he kind of throws like the Mitch Leidner back shoulder corner throw, which gets the job done.
Well, was it intended for Eubanks?
I think so.
Okay.
I hope so. I don't know.
I mean, it seemed like those guys were in a line, and I wasn't... From my angle, it seemed like... I couldn't tell the depth of who, where they were.
Someone's definitely in the wrong route.
Exactly. And so I thought, I wonder if he was throwing it to the guy behind him.
And so Eubanks has that catch. He has another catch down the sideline where it looks like he really jams his knee up, but he returns later, so he's fine. He also had a, Joel Klatt was right. You know, Patterson kind of throws it and it goes to nobody. And you look at the replay and Northwestern clearly zoning. And so... Eubanks needs to settle down at the hole in the zone. He just kind of keeps drifting downfield towards the cornerback.
Okay.
And that feels like something that's not going to be an IN in my chart because I agree that that's a route issue.
Okay.
So he had a couple of moments in this game, and McCune had a big drop, so he was kind of earning some playing time.
Yeah, that's the thing I was wondering is I don't remember seeing McCune after that drop too much. I don't think he got targeted again.
He didn't. They had a lot of like single back sets with Mason and Gentry, so I don't know.
Yeah.
But it did seem like Eubanks did get more time than
usual. Because Eubanks' catches came after that.
Yes.
So.
But he also had kind of a couple of oopsie moments.
Yeah.
Like, I'm pretty sure that one of the instances where Northwestern gets a big tackle for loss as they're trying to run down G, and someone forgot to block down. I'm pretty sure that was Ubex. So
maybe not quite in the run game yet.
Right. But, you know, he's a second-year player, third-year player?
He's a redshirt sophomore.
Redshirt sophomore. So, you know, also came as a developmental guy who was a wide receiver in high school.
Yeah, he was a high-ceiling kind of guy.
Yeah, so kind of seeing a little bit of that, but still developing. Hasn't acquired the senior leadership. All right. Nico Collins.
All right. It's Nico time.
So, Nico Collins had a pretty decent game.
He led the team in receptions and yards.
Does need to know that he's not a slot receiver.
Yeah.
And when it's third down and he's got an angle to go directly upfield, just do that.
Especially when you're as big as Nico Collins.
Right. So there were a couple of catches that he made that he did not convert into first downs. And maybe he doesn't make it if he goes directly upfield, but I felt like he was turning what ended up as a 4th-and-3 into a 4th-and-1 at worst.
At worst.
So, like, just needs to know that he's kind of one of those battleship wide receivers who should go north and south whenever that opportunity presents itself. And that slant on the goal line looked like a pretty good throw to me.
Yeah.
And Collins just didn't put his hands up for it.
Yeah, and based on the route combinations, you would think that that is
the primary
option.
For. Yeah. So I don't think
he started outside, right? And yeah. He cut inside of two guys on a slant like that to a big receiver. I mean, that's kind of what you're looking for in that situation,
right? So it kind of felt like he thought the ball might be to Peoples Jones, but dude, you're the primary option, and you're 6'6". Like that, go.
Yeah,
you need to go get that ball. But he should have had a touchdown, but Patterson kind of held him up short on that big kind of chunk play.
Yeah, and we've seen that a couple times, right, where Patterson has seen him open and just kind of put it in the butt zone for him, so to speak, where he just kind of is the best athlete around. Yeah. And goes up and catches the ball.
I would have preferred that to go in the also run into the touchdown area zone.
I'm not going to argue with that.
Sure.
But
how could you?
So the other thing I had, and maybe you may disagree, but you mentioned the part about the first down, knowing where the first down line is. I thought he had a catch on the sideline too, where he just didn't know where the sideline was there and
kind of
out of bounds.
He leapt for a ball that it didn't feel like he needed to leap for.
Yeah.
And he caught it, and then he got hit by the Northwestern defensive back, and that put him out of bounds.
Right.
But I was just like, you could have just reached up for that.
And stayed on your feet.
So he leaps up, and it hits him in the chest, and I'm like,
just use your hands.
Yeah, just put them above your head. Maybe you can't do that.
I hope that's not the case.
No, because we've seen him do it.
Sure.
It's a little weird that he's the designated flash screen guy, right?
Yeah.
Like, he's the biggest dude, but you'd think, one, that would be someone you'd prefer to have blocking.
Do you think that they'd rather have guys like Peoples Jones and Perry blocking because they are more familiar with that? Or
I don't know.
Maybe Collins' blocking hasn't come along yet?
I mean, you do kind of have this thing where the taller a guy is, the more difficult it is for him to get leverage on anybody. The sure. Pat Massey effect.
Sure.
6'8 defensive tackle. What were we thinking? Anyway.
6'8 non-tight end almost.
Yeah. Well, that's Mike Massey. He was a tight end.
Okay.
And then Pat Massey.
But he wasn't 6'8.
No. He was 6'5.
Right.
They were a tall family, but not particularly good at holding up against the run. As a family.
You can throw him. You just can't run.
What were we talking about?
Who should be catching these wide receiver screens?
Oh, it's possible that they think that he's not that good at blocking, and they're just like, well, we'll put the worst blocker as the guy. It's kind of a perverse incentive, though.
Yeah.
I kind of want to see Ambry one.
They're also limited at wide receiver options.
So they are, but, I mean, they have Peoples Jones back on punt returns, and he's got a little something to him. So.
Sure. But we've also seen him block well.
That's true.
And Grant Perry, I would guess, is a solid blocker because he's been in those roles for a while.
Yeah.
So if you have a guy that is big and probably hard to bring down and is probably going to fall forward, and a couple guys that you trust blocking, maybe this is where you end up.
Michigan ran a quads formation that they would motion in.
Twice?
They ran it twice.
Yeah.
And both times it looked very much like they were not at all in a legal formation. And there's a guy who's like apparently an actual ref who was like, no, it was legal because you got to be like line up with the hip. But I went back and I looked at it and I'm like, I don't think so. It doesn't look like it to me.
Did you bring your ruler out or?
I mean, it's, you can't, there's parallax and stuff like that.
Okay. I'll take your word for it.
We're probably the only football podcast this week mentioning parallax.
Next thing you know, we'll start bringing in shapes like rhombus and such.
That's also a pretty good one.
Okay.
Rhombus. Although the rhombus isn't really relevant. That was just kind of...
No, I was called out for that in a college class one time as I was describing something. I used a rhombus, and the guy looked at me and was like, what is this, high school geometry? So I was like, I thought it was a good description, but...
Getting personal now.
Well, I just... This is, when things like that happen, you remember words, right?
Yeah.
So
now that's...
I'm going to bring that...
burned into your skull when you got called out for using a rhombus.
Find a way to use the word rhombus.
What is this, high school geometry?
I mean, he did it in a nice way. It wasn't like in a mean way. He was giving me a compliment, like I knew what that meant.
What is it? High school geometry? That's not right. That's not right. Media Wayne, people! Finally, Michigan's ground game in this game was... erratic, but ultimately effective, I would say. I mean, Higdon had a nice day.
Yeah, the last drive or so, it slowed down.
Yeah, they're like running the same play on every first down and getting 1 yard.
Which was a little, made me a little anxious.
Yeah.
But before that, kind of in the meat of the game, so to speak, when they would want to run the ball, it seemed like they could get 4-5 yards.
Well, I mean, they had
consistently.
They had kind of those early issues where they're pulling on Wainu, and I'm like, what are you doing against this team? And then they did kind of figure it out, and so instead of pulling on Wainu, they were just running like A-gap ISOs.
Okay.
So they would blow out, and Seth mentioned this before the game, is that Northwestern kind of spreads their defensive tackles wider than a lot of teams
yes.
do. So Michigan's like, all right, we're just going to run right at that. And so they had Ben Mason go take on Patty Fisher, and he won those. And that was like, you know, that chunk run that Higdon had right up the middle. And mm-hmm. then the really easy touchdown mm-hmm. in the first half. Those were both just A-gap ISOs where Michigan, you know, moved it from the tackle, gave Patty Fisher too much room to shut down, and then threw Ben Mason in his face. So,
which seems like a really good game plan.
Yeah, that was a good adjustment to... I just kind of wish that they had started off doing that because, I mean, Northwestern's approach is the same as it was every year. They have these really, really aggressive linebackers. You need to put them in the wrong gap. And Michigan didn't really do that very much.
No. So. But when they ISO'd up on them,
yeah.
They could win.
I mean, you didn't see a ton of misdirection. You saw, like, occasional bits and bloops. And then, you know, they were able to, like, get outside. And once you get outside and get past that first level, like, there's nobody scraping over the top for Northwestern.
Yeah.
Because they're all just burying their noses in the line as soon as they see run action.
Yeah.
So the big Higdon run... I mean, there's no second level as soon as he gets through the first line.
Right.
So that's just how they play. It seems like that's how everybody plays these days. is nobody going to read and react anymore? But, I mean, what were Higdon's numbers in this game?
He had 30 carries for 115 yards and 3.8 average.
So,
but
not great.
Take away how many on that last drive or the last couple drives. And all of a sudden now you're probably pushing over 4 to 5 yards a carry.
I mean, the kind of frustrating thing is that they didn't really have much play action where you're getting the linebackers to commit and then, oh, look, here's Zach Gentry on a seam route.
And this seems like the team you'd want to do that against?
Exactly. I'm not a huge fan of this game plan.
No.
But
they got away with it, I guess.
They did. All right, we're going to take a break. This is going to be an actual break.
Okay. An actual break.
An actual break. We're going to come back, talk about the defense.
Let me just tell you a couple things to keep in your mind while you're out there. When we take the field, we're going to win. We've got big goals. We've got big ideas. We've got to win this game, and there is no game on the remainder of our schedule more important than the one you're going down to the tunnel to play today. Now let's go! Let's go!
Underground Printing is proud to present the Bow Store. Visit us at our new location at 333 South Main or online at www.bow.team.
It's painless. It's online. It's group ordering made easy for your next custom printed apparel order. Pogo from Underground Printing takes the aggravation out of custom printing for a group. Whether you're selling shirts for a fundraiser, organizing a large event, or trying to collect sizes and payment for a family reunion, Underground Printing is here to help. Save time and hassle every step of the way with our easy-to-use site. No more guessing what to order, chasing people down to pay, or wasting time trying to sort out who needs what. We'll set it up and you can just sit back and relax. We can even take care of individual shipping. To learn more about Pogo, visit us at any of our convenient locations or at pogo.undergroundshirts.com.
If you find yourself on the wrong side of the law in Ann Arbor or around Metro Detroit, you want a Michigan man in the huddle. Call former prosecutor and now criminal defense attorney Jonathan Paul at 248-924-9458 or visit his website, michiganlawgrad.com.
I grew up in a small town of Hazlitt, Michigan, and I witnessed a lot of great people making a lot of poor financial decisions. And I thought to myself, I don't want to be in that position. I don't want to have my retirement at risk. Over the last 17 years, my team has developed and refined our process, which helps people understand what's important to them and what they value most. And because people don't have pensions anymore, we're adding in multiple income streams during retirement. At Peak Wealth Management, our goal is to build long-lasting relationships, and we do that by building trust, by showing our integrity, and letting them know how much we care. And that's one of the most important things we do here at Peak, is understand your goals and help you get there.
The places you'll go may seem far from Ann Arbor, from San Francisco to St. Louis to Shanghai. But as members of the Alumni Association, we're never far, because Michigan is more than a place. It's a mindset that connects us. For those who leave Michigan, but for whom Michigan never leaves, this is where you belong. The Alumni Association of the University of Michigan. Join today at umalumni.com. Don't call it a comeback. I've been here for years. I'm rocking my pants, putting suckers in fear, making the tears rain down like a monsoon. Listen to the bass go boom, explosion.
So the defense did basically what you would expect, but it was extremely hairy getting there because Northwestern scores on their first three drives, and they have about 150 yards of offense. And then they have about 50 yards for the rest of the game. So it's hairy, but if you told me that this was going to be the result, I would have been like, okay. And because they got all those yards on those three drives, they got to score on all those drives. So if Michigan like sprinkles in 200 yards of offense across a whole game, then you're talking about 10 points or 7 points instead of 17, because they used all their yards to score and they didn't do anything else all game.
Right. So Northwestern came off a bye.
Right.
And also off the loss of arguably their best offensive player. So would you think that having extra time and basically having to come up with a game plan that they've never really had to could have used before because they changed running backs and all that led to Michigan's early struggles potentially?
Well, yeah, whenever you're going up against a script for a team that is clearly prepped for you, mm-hmm. it's going to be tougher.
Sure.
I mean, we saw this against Penn State last year, mm-hmm. Michigan State every single year, where they just save like a half decade's worth of plays for the Michigan game.
Sure.
So there's always an element of you're going to have that script at the beginning of the game. It's going to be plays you haven't seen before. And sometimes you're going to get lost because specifically you've been game planned against.
Right.
And then often you see people settle down after that and kind of display the true nature of what this matchup is. And Michigan did that. You know, kind of the other factor I thought in Northwestern's early success is that I was watching a Northwestern quarterback do football.
Yeah.
And so Clayton Thorson looked like the first round pick he was reputed to be for about a quarter and a half.
I mean, he was 8 of 9 to start.
Yeah.
Which means
that. And he's hitting small windows because Michigan is doing much better against the slants.
Yeah.
So they were still completions, but the reason they were completions is because they were in exactly the right place. And you've got safeties jumping on the back of guys and raking balls out or trying to. And that's completely acceptable to me. If you give up a 7-yard slant and, like, I feel like there's a pretty solid chance that slant's going to get knocked out or and not be completed, then that's fine. It's just the ones where you can't do anything and then you just tackle afterward. I'm like, that's too easy.
Yeah. So
I thought they did a much better job in general of challenging on those plays.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, and I think the key, like you said, is Thorson hit his spots for the first few drives.
He did, and they were running him, which they haven't done all year, and that's like it wasn't like much, but you know, it just gives the defense a little bit more to think about.
And we didn't see the pitch count.
No, they didn't put TJ Green in at all. So that little thing where Northwestern looks great for two drives and then pulls Thorson out never happened.
I was kind of waiting for that. Obviously, it didn't come.
Well, you know,
maybe he's healthy now.
It's one of those things where Michigan gets everybody's best shot. Seriously, like,
lose to Duke, lose to Akron, but hey, took a shot at Michigan.
If you think that didn't happen, you weren't watching Pat Fitzgerald in the first half. Every crowd shot of, well, not crowd shot, but every camera shot of Pat Fitzgerald was just like.
I've started rewatching the game, and there were definitely a few so far.
It just makes it. I mean, I don't have anything against Northwestern.
No.
But I do love Pat Fitzgerald getting so pumped up and then having to kick rocks later in the game. I just. Because, you know, it's just annoying when, you know, you're losing a football game and they cut to the opposing coach and he's like, yeah. And so you want to see him despondent at the end of the game, coming off the field, trying to find someone's hand to shake and just being like, oh, screw it. So I enjoyed that.
Well, you got it.
You guys missed my completely awesome pantomime of Pat Fitzgerald, by the way, because it's a very visual podcast.
Arms were flailing.
Flailing a boot.
I will attest to that. Cornerbacks?
I mean, I can't argue with it. Were there only two calls against the cornerbacks?
I think there was a holding and a PI, a DPI.
Hill got a holding and
both on third down.
Long got a DPI.
Yeah, and both those were legit.
Those were completely legit calls. And that's disappointing.
Yeah.
But, you know, I thought that whenever they were called into action, other than that, they did well. Like, you know, Long had a pass breakup on 3rd and 10 that was really good. And they didn't really challenge Hill very much except for that play. So,
well, I thought a few times they threw the ball up. After they got the one call, they threw the ball up on kind of jump ball fade type routes and to see if they could get.
But they weren't accurate enough to, like.
No, it wasn't. I made a joke that this isn't an attempt at a completion. This is like, we're not really sure what to do. Let's see if we can catch Michigan's wide or cornerback.
They're running the all PI offense.
Yeah.
So, maybe. I just think that they were.
Well, the one time was like one of the last drives. Yeah. I think it was after Michigan had taken the lead. And they just threw the ball down the field. I think it was long. And, I mean, nothing, obviously. But at that point, you've gotten, what, 2 or 3 first downs in the last 2.5 quarters?
Yeah.
What are you going to do?
Well, I feel like a lot of the pressure that Michigan was going to get wasn't immediate pressure.
Mm-hmm.
It was fairly quick, but it's also like, okay, this read is covered, this second read is covered, and now I'm in trouble.
Mm-hmm.
And that goes back to the cornerbacks as well.
Mm-hmm.
So whenever you give up 200 yards of offense in a game, like,
your secondary is probably playing well.
Yes. Right?
Everyone's fine. Probably playing fine. Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, the one thing that I did kind of pick up that I didn't like was Michigan gets hit on a tunnel screen. I think this was actually their first touchdown drive. So the tunnel screen down to the one.
Yeah.
So they played that fairly well, and they were going to get a first down off of it. It was like 3rd and 6.
Mm-hmm.
And then Tyree Cannell puts himself in the wrong gap.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what turns it from, you know, a 6-yard gain that gets you a first down to we're down to the one.
Okay.
And that hasn't happened as much this year. So Kinnell missed a lot of tackles last year, and this year he's been pretty solid. Maybe even very solid at like coming up and finishing plays. But you know, kind of got to put yourself in the right gap and force your opponent back to your help, and didn't do that.
You were also saying that he got beat inside on bracket coverage.
There's a third down where it looked like Michigan was zoning the slot receiver and bracketing him laterally.
Yeah.
So anything that broke out was one of the cornerbacks' deal, and anything that broke in was Kinnell's deal. And he broke in, and Kinnell didn't get to him, and they got a completion. They got a first down. I was like, I mean, that's kind of – you got to get that one.
Yeah.
Because that's, like, your whole, like, goal.
It's kind of like setting the edge and then giving it up.
But I did like the fact that they were looking for that stuff. Like,
yeah,
that was obviously a weakness in the defense the past couple weeks. And it looks like Don Brown has done a pretty good job of adapting to that. So they did get their slants, but I felt that they were challenged, and there were a number that were incomplete. So once you're talking about, okay, we can get 60% of 7 yards, it doesn't become such a good play, you know? Like 60% of the time we get 7, and 60% of the time we get 0. Not great. 40% of the time we get 0.
And Glasgow looked pretty solid in coverage when he was playing,
guys. I mean, he looks fine. Like,
yeah.
I think Hudson is obviously a little bit better of an athlete and a better blitzer, but I don't think there's a huge drop-off.
No, but I think we saw him in coverage a few times today that I don't remember seeing a ton in the previous weeks.
Yeah, I mean, he's like, there was like the 3rd and 29 where they run a little drag route against him and he's there to tackle immediately. I mean, that's all you want.
He had another one where they tried to run some sort of a post or something over the middle, and he dove in front and was in the exact spot, like the ball wasn't going to be completed. So there's a couple times when I thought.
I mean, I think he's a reliable option.
Yeah.
And if Hudson does end up going to the league, like, he's probably your starter at Viper next year.
Or at least the leading candidate, I would say.
Yeah, probably. I said probably.
Okay, I'm sorry.
Come on, man.
All right.
And then the defensive line had an interesting game. Like, you feel like when they're able to just run it up the middle and they get 3 yards that you've been betrayed as a Michigan fan, which is not a rational opinion at all.
We should only have tackles for loss.
Right. And you're just like, why did they get 3 yards on that play? Oh, God. This defense feels so much less solid than it used to. But Mike Dwumfor had a sack, and he forced a sack where Quiddy Pay cleaned up for him after he beat a guy raw on the inside. He also got crushed on Northwestern's first touchdown, or their second touchdown, where, you know, they got down to the 5, and then Dwumfor is in the game. They double him, and that goes poorly.
Yeah.
And then it's just a matter of walking into the end zone. But, you know, if he's going to solo sack as a defensive tackle, like that makes up for some things. That was probably the best we've seen him, just because he seemed like a player who could make an impact in pretty unlikely circumstances to make an impact. Like an interior rusher getting, basically forcing 2 sacks in a football game is a big, big deal.
And over the last few weeks, we've seen him start to make individual plays.
Yes.
Like, it's not coming together consistently yet, but he's still only a redshirt sophomore, and he was kind of a mid-3-star.
Yeah.
And he's starting to work his way into a defensive line rotation after only his second year of playing.
Yeah, he's still a bad run defender.
Yeah.
And I don't think that he's going to be a good run defender.
You don't think his upside is?
Until next year.
Okay.
So, like, he's still building.
Right.
He's still becoming something. But I think that...
But we're starting to see flashes of his potential.
Yes.
On the field. Not just, like, practice hype or this guy's doing this, but now you're seeing, like, sacks or discarding a guard, things like that.
And then Josh Uche, or Uche...
I did not see the broadcast.
Oh, you didn't see the broadcast?
No.
I can't criticize anyone for getting someone's name wrong, so no. I'll retract that.
Okay.
Although it was...
So Josh Uche.
Josh Uche, of course, gets the sack on the final snap, which was pretty, like... That was pretty good.
Yeah.
And he has another play where, you know, he is relevant in one of the Dwumfor sacks.
Mm-hmm.
So he's cutting off space, and he's almost getting there. So you're beginning to see him be able to get around the corner. I do kind of feel like... The offseason hype was a little bit based on the fact that he's going up against Michigan's tackles.
Yeah.
Who have bounced back from a very rough start, but are still not, like, top-end guys.
Right.
So he got an opportunity to flash a little bit in this game, and he did. Quiddy Pay two sacks as well.
Their one on third down where they finally forced Northwestern to punt seemed like halfway through the game.
Right.
Big play.
Well, yeah, and that's another one where, you know, Dwumfor kind of moves up the middle and does enough to flush the quarterback. And then Winovich is there, and then Paige shuts it down with acceleration that is pretty exciting. Because, like, his ability to, like, just shut that down and go tackle the guy from a pretty much standing start is – that's an athlete.
So yeah.
That is a quick twitch athlete.
Well, you said Winovich was there, and he was also here, and he was in a lot of other places. He seemed to be almost everywhere in
that
game.
He was, yes.
And he had also another three tackles for a loss, which he had nine tackles, eight solo, and three tackles for a loss. And it's kind of like, I almost want to say I didn't notice him because, oh yeah, that's Chase Winovich disrupting everything again, because that's what I've been watching for a year and a half now. But once again, he's another guy in this line that when you pair with some of these other pass rushers is just almost unblockable at times.
Well, and two of those tackles for loss were like plus three events to me.
Yeah.
Where he splits a double team and then goes in solo TFLs. Like, that's the best thing you can do as a defender is like ignore a double team and split it and then go tackle. So those were major impact plays. We didn't really see that much from Gary. We saw him leave the game for periods, and when he came back, he was wearing a pretty big brace on one of his shoulders.
Okay.
And I'm wondering if that's the same injury from last year, and like if it is, why they didn't get surgery in the offseason.
Yeah. Like, I mean, do we even know what that injury was?
Well, he would come off the field last year, and he'd kind of be like
hunched,
holding his right arm.
Yeah.
And then you see that brace on the right shoulder, and you're just like, that kind of seems like the same thing. Because it was last year was also kind of the thing where he'd have to leave for a little bit, and then he could come back.
Yeah.
And now it seems a little bit worse. Like, it seems like Gary...
It's kind of going downhill.
Well, I mean, I don't think we saw him much, if at all, in the second half. I mean, I think he was out there for a few snaps, but it was mostly pay.
Yeah. And then they'd bring in Uche for pass rush situations,
which
is what they were in a lot of the time anyway.
Well, they're moving Pay down to like a defensive tackle spot, which is normally what they would do with Gary on a passing down.
Mm-hmm.
Getting a little bit nervous that Gary's thing is just chronic until he gets surgery, and we're not going to get to see that until he's in the NFL.
Probably, yeah.
Which is a downer, man.
It is, but it's also showing that they have a couple of guys behind him.
They do, but, you know, we were hoping that Rashawn Gary would be
the year.
The defensive Heisman contender this year.
Yeah.
And that's obviously not going to happen.
Probably.
And I think it goes back to the shoulder that they just kind of let go. I don't understand.
I mean, we don't know what the injury is. We don't know,
I don't know. The
best way to take care of it. But
it kind of feels like...
It's kind of a disappointment.
It kind of feels like an own goal, man.
Josh Ross.
Devin Josh Gill. Ross. I mean, Josh Ross separated a ball.
That was... Yeah. They looked a little bit like his brother on that kind of hit, didn't he? just where he rocks a guy.
Yeah, I mean... He's 30 pounds heavier, though, so that's, like,
sure.
It's even, like, you don't see that very much in college football these days, where someone just gets separated from the ball like that, because it's difficult to do that without getting a penalty.
Right.
And he did it. And he didn't have a whole lot else in this game.
Yeah, I didn't have a lot of linebacker notes. It seemed like
no.
They were just kind of there, and they made some plays, but nothing that flashed, I guess.
Well, I think that Northwestern was pretty concerned about blocking up the first level. So you see a lot of those plays where it's just like they're grinding in for 3 yards and linebackers are running up and
making a tackle,
but nothing spectacular.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think Bush did have, there was one third down where it kind of looked for a second like they might get the corner and get the first down. And then Bush kind of came over the top and it was third and two and they had a punt.
Mm-hmm.
I think Ross had one more play too. I think he had a nice tackle for loss if I remember correctly, but I don't know if that's in the box score. I'm just inventing it.
He has two tackles and a pass defense.
All right. So the other tackle was good, even though it wasn't for loss.
Okay.
That's what I'm saying. I mean, two tackles is kind of sums it up, right?
Yeah.
It's just kind of like...
No, the leading tacklers on the team were not the usual suspects at linebacker.
Who were they?
Winovich, Cannell, Glasgow.
Right. So there you go. I mean, they were throwing the ball a lot. They didn't really have a lot of run game in the second
half. A lot of success. It seemed like they ran the ball decently well against us in the first few drives,
right.
And then nothing. So
maybe that's script.
Yeah.
and Michigan wasn't quite prepped for it.
And a bye week.
Yeah, a post-bye week script as well. So, all right, that is the defense. I'm going to take a break, come back, talk special teams, and we have a redshirt rundown as well.
We have a lot in common. You rode the bus to Bursley, so did Larry Page, and so did I. And we all love MGO Blog. I'm Nick Hopwood, your MGO financial coach. My entire family went to Michigan State, but I was the smart one finding my way to Ann Arbor to study econ. I've been a financial planner for 17 years, earning the designation Certified Financial Planner, and founded Peak Wealth Management in Plymouth. I know you're pretty smart, and you probably have a sweet retirement spreadsheet already. My job is to make sure. As a financial coach, I make sure you're on track, or if you're not on track, I tell you exactly what you're going to need to do. And if you listen, I'll be able to tell you how your future should look, just like the knowledge. And I have cool charts and graphs to tell the story, sort of like the Mathlete. To learn more or schedule time to chat, check out peakwm.com/mgoblog.
Hey, this is Seth from MGoBlog. Like many of you by now, when it was time to refinance my house, I talked to Matt Demarest in HomeSure Lending. Since we had bought only a few years earlier, it was amazing how different the experience was between Matt and our bank. He knows his stuff, gives you and your loan his personal attention, and can shop at the different lenders so you're always a priority. We are constantly getting similar feedback from readers who used HomeSure Lending when buying or refinancing a house in Michigan. He knows the mortgage industry well, which becomes a big deal when your loan is as complicated as mine was. If you haven't met him yet, he's tailgating this year with his HemGo bus at the Charity Beer Garden on 327 Hoover. And if you're buying or refinancing, reach out to HomeSure Lending, NMLS number 1161358.
If you need a place to stay in Ann Arbor and don't want to be stuck out by I-94, there's a new hotel downtown, and the owners, who should be well known to the Michigan community, have asked our help to get the word out. The Martin family, yes, that Martin family, recently opened the Residence Inn Ann Arbor downtown, just a block from Main Street and a short walk to Michigan Stadium. They're competitively priced and offer a free hot breakfast, free Wi-Fi, fully equipped kitchen and every suite and an indoor pool. That's the Residence Inn Ann Arbor downtown.
Passion for e-commerce.
Sell stuff online.
Security. Performance.
Conversion.
Beautiful user experiences.
Belle expérience utilisateur.
Monthly marketing.
PPC SEO.
Make your user a customer.
Conversion.
Eau de Parfum for online retailers. Love your website. Let Human Elements show you how. Available at human-element.com and find department stores, not find department stores.
Let me just tell you a couple things to keep in your mind while you're out there. When we take the field, we're going to win. We've got big goals. We've got big ideas. We've got to win this game, and there is no game on the remainder of our schedule more important than the one you're going down to the tunnel to play today. Now let's go. Let's go.
Underground Printing is proud to present the Bow Store. Visit us at our new location at 333 South Main or online at www.bow.team.
Special teams and game theory issues. I think we have confirmation that Will Hart is a Ray Guy contender. 6 punts, a 51-yard average in this game. So he's finally going to get a point on the known friends and trusted agents because Michigan punted enough. And, I mean, there was one that was a little bit of a line drive that was kind of dangerous for return purposes, but most of them were nice and high and easy to cover. So that's... Well,
I had Will Hart Cook written down. That's about
it. I don't think we're having a third.
Okay.
We're
maybe your new cat.
Well, you could name your child Will Hart Cook.
If few steps that need to be crossed before I get to that point, but sure, we'll put that.
Ladies, if you're listening,
it's just a personal ad.
Don't worry about it. No ladies are listening to this podcast.
That's probably true.
I mean, if you are, thank you, but I don't have any illusions about the kind of people who come up and like, hey, I'm a really big fan of the blog.
Yeah.
It's never...
Mostly kind of the same person.
It's never Jessica Rabbit. Anyway.
We haven't gotten into the... We haven't marketed well to the cartoons yet.
No. Nordine has a couple of chip shots. Michigan has a couple of penalties on punts that I don't agree with.
Okay.
Like, Peoples-Jones had one kind of jumpy spin movie punt return that was pretty good. It comes back for a block in the back that's like... just a guy existing, and then he's got momentum, and the guy tries to change his direction, and he's not blocking the guy, and they bump into each other. And that's like, you know, I have this pet peeve of mine in football where you should have a right to your momentum.
Okay.
And if someone changes direction and your momentum can't be stopped in time, then that's their problem and not yours. This mostly comes up on pass interference on underthrown balls. When, like, you're running really fast, and the other guy's running really fast, and then that guy stops... And you're running really fast, and you bump into him, and it's like, well, whose fault is that?
Yeah, we talked about it a little bit last week, I think, with the Ambry-Thomas one in the end zone, yeah.
So I feel like that was a similar incident, and they flagged it anyway. It's unfortunate, but I think...
But probably what you're going to get on a special teams big play.
I'm ceding the ace point.
Okay.
Donovan Peoples-Jones is a fairly good punt returner.
Good. It's nice to have you on board.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here. The only other thing of note was Northwestern had a couple of weird, like, pop-up kicks on kickoffs.
Right. They kicked deep the first time to Thomas, and he gets tackled at, like, the 18.
Yeah.
And then they start pooching it short to about in the 20.
Yeah, and Hawkins can't get the first one and has to cover it, and Michigan has bad field position. He gets the second one and gets out to the 30.
Somewhere, yeah.
So, like, that was probably a good trade for them.
I mean, I'll take the ball at the 30.
No, but, like, they also, like... ball to 30 versus probably ball to 25, and then I think the other one was like at the 14 or something,
right?
Like that worked out for them a little bit.
So what do you think, what's your take on just kick returns in general now? Like,
could you be more specific?
Well, because they changed the rule, right?
Yeah,
so now anything inside the 25, you throw your hand up, you get it to the 25,
right?
It seems like logic would say, aside from a few circumstances, why don't you just do that?
Yeah, I mean...
But like, then Ambry-Thomas on his second kick return of the year goes to the house.
I mean, if you're down and you're looking for a big play,
right?
That's an opportunity.
So if your offense is stalling, it's maybe a good time to try to bring it out.
Yeah.
Maybe at the end of a half or game when, like, a drive doesn't really matter.
Like, again, the Notre Dame, people were like criticizing Donovan Peoples-Jones for fielding that punt at like the 2.
And right.
Dude, there's 30 seconds left in this half. Like, he's either going to break a big return or Michigan's going to kneel it out.
Right? Yeah, okay.
So that would be a good situation.
So, but aside from that...
Well, also, if you feel like you've got something...
If you got a play, maybe.
Like, Michigan had an opening kickoff return last time they played, where they basically just ran power.
Yeah.
And that was cool. So if you've got something like that up your sleeve, that would be a good time to do it. Or if you just believe in your athlete back there.
Okay.
So if you've got Ambry-Thomas back there, then give him a shot. If you've got Mike Hart, maybe not. No offense to Mike Hart, but he's
probably not a kick returner.
He's not a kick returner.
Okay. Because we saw Nebraska mostly do that last week when the game was remotely close. Just take it at 25.
Sure.
And then Northwestern was doing it yesterday.
Well, Northwestern, you know, do they have an Ambry-Thomas back there?
Sure.
Probably not. I mean, no, they don't. Let's just be explicit about that. They do not have an Ambry-Thomas back there. They have a Flynn
Nagel.
Yeah.
He had a nice catch.
He's a good player, but, you know.
He's not a kick returner.
He's not Ambry-Thomas.
Sure.
And then you had your redshirt list.
Oh, yeah. So I thought that with the new redshirt rules, it might not be a bad idea just to track any plausible guy who could redshirt. Like freshmen, but then a few sophomores who you weren't sure where they were on the depth chart and how much run they were going to get.
Right, because we've mentioned that there's the possibility of a quote-unquote natural redshirt.
Well, and like, so we've had guys get hurt in games before that are midway through the season. And if you're a starter, you've probably played all those games, obviously. But if you're not, you may or may not have played those games.
Right.
So if you get hurt in game six, it'd be nice to know, hey, how many games did you play previously, and can you use this year's redshirting? So Ronnie Bell and Aiden Hutchinson have played in all five, but that's to be expected.
Sure.
They were probably going to play.
Yeah.
We have Omari Samuels has played in the first four, but did not play yesterday. So he's right on that cusp.
He played in the Notre Dame game?
He was counted on the chart.
Okay.
I mean,
all right.
And the other one that is a bit head-scratching to me is Ben Van Sumeren has now played in four games after yesterday.
That's a little odd.
And I can't remember a single play where I saw him play.
I don't think he's been on offense.
I think it's been
like maybe
punt
really,
block
really late, yeah.
Or field goal block.
And he's a fullback, so it's not like you're going to lose that guy to the NFL.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, he's also a fullback, so do you need to redshirt? You know, I don't know.
I think that the idea of a fifth-year fullback is appealing.
So he hasn't played his fifth game yet. So but we'll find out next week.
It's heavily implied that he will.
Potentially, yes. Yeah. Other ones of note, Barrett's only played in one. He was listed in the SMU game. Mayfield's played in two. I think we both know that. Blowout games.
Right.
Jamarik Woods and Jalen Kelly-Powell have each played in three so far, and not in a ton of relevant time from anything I can remember.
Kelly-Powell was hurt, so I think that's probably...
Okay, so he missed the first two games. He's played in the last three.
Yeah, so I think that he's not even a candidate.
Okay. And then same thing with Woods, played in the first game, not the next two, and then the Nebraska-Northwestern.
Well, he kind of had to in the Northwestern game because...
Notre Dame game.
No, the Northwestern game, because at one point, like, Metellus was out with an injury, and then Cannell got shook up.
Okay.
So
they had to put him in. And then Hassan Haskins played in the first two games and hasn't since.
Well, they were also talking about, like, taking a look at him on defense.
Okay.
So if they're moving him to defense, like, mid-season, I think he'll probably end up redshirting.
Okay. And Christian Turner has played in, last week.
Yeah. So I think you're probably going to see most of those guys get redshirts. And interesting names that didn't play at all, of course, are both tight ends.
Yes. Well, like Welshoff and Upshaw and Shoemaker and Mustafa Muhammad, Ryan Hayes, Cam McGrone, all these guys didn't even get in a game. Vincent Gray, all the cornerbacks, the Greens,
yeah.
Faustin, those guys, not even a game. So,
all those guys are getting redshirts.
Probably pretty certain. Miles Sims as well.
Do we have any game theory stuff?
We talked a little bit in the prep about when Michigan was down four, they got the ball back with 9 or 10 minutes left.
Oh, yeah.
And their drive just took a really long time. It scored with like 4 minutes left. And it seemed like it was almost a now or never approach.
Well, no, because if you have your timeouts and you lose the ball with 4 minutes left, you get at least one more shot if you can stop them.
Potentially, yeah.
So, I mean, also it's like, if you're going to score, you're draining the clock for the other team.
Right.
I mean,
I wasn't like 100% one away. Yeah. It was just kind of like an interesting situation that unfolded. And I mean, the clock just kind of kept moving. And you're like, wow, now we're down to it.
Oh, there was the punt right at the end of the game where Michigan has like a 4th-and-1.
Yeah.
And there's
40 seconds
left. And if Ben Mason gets the first down, it's...
It was also, at the 40-yard line?
Yeah, it's
and
the
it was
40.
Like a yard to a yard and a half. It's not like a fall over first down.
It was exactly 1 yard.
Was it?
It was exactly 1 yard. So it wasn't a short one. It wasn't a long one. It was one.
Yeah.
And at that point, I'm like, let's just give it to Ben. But
Were you hoping they were going to snap it when they lined up?
Yeah, I was.
Okay.
But I also, I also realized that that was a pretty, like, hair thin decision. I'm not like upset about it. Either way is completely defensible.
So if they were up four, it's a little different, right?
Yes. If they were up four, I think you go for it because you have more field to play with.
Yeah.
And you also are in actually greater danger of losing in regulation.
Also, Northwestern hadn't put together any semblance of a drive in three quarters.
That's true.
So that you like you said,
I don't know. I don't know if that argues one way or the other.
When you play 1950s football, you make 1950s decisions, right?
Yes.
So that was where I ended up being like, okay, I'm all right with them lining up and see if they can draw them off, which they almost did. The guy jumped across and then got back.
Yeah.
But in the end of that, take the delay, punt it, and say, hey, see if you can go 80 yards or 50 yards on our defense, which you haven't done since the sun was up.
What they should do is they should do the thing where they like hard count it forever, and then they just snap it with 1 second left when the defense is like, oh, they're not going to snap it.
They also went for it on fourth down earlier in the game.
Yeah, I thought all the fourth down decisions were good and fairly clear.
And they were going to go for it on fourth and three?
And they had a false start, yeah.
Did you agree with going for it there?
Yeah, there was. I mean, you're down. This isn't a game with a ton of possessions in it. You're kind of in the no man's land where, I mean, do we even know if Will Hart can punt it less than 50 yards at this point?
Will he keep it in the stadium?
like the trade-off of like 20 yards versus a fourth and three is not even a question, right?
Yeah.
So, appropriately aggressive, I thought.
Yeah, no, that's what you want to see.
Yeah.
And we're starting to see that more, I think, in college football and in the NFL, where teams are now going for it.
Yeah. I wouldn't know.
No. I haven't brought up the Lions yet, so I thought if I just started generically.
Why? Like, it only hurts you. I just get annoyed, and then you're thinking about the Lions.
But I'm not a Lions fan, so I don't care. Okay. It just, I put together the roundtables, and every week there's a forced discussion, and you're over there just kind of.
Well, I'm not.
Your voice goes up a few octaves.
I'm not there to, like.
Why are we talking about this?
Yes, that's exactly what I do. Because that's. I'm here to talk about Michigan football, and Ed's like, how about those Lions? And I'm like, Ed.
But Sam is also and if you remember, Craig Ross was a Browns fan for a long time and recently converted to a Lions fan.
I don't remember this, because whenever somebody...
Because you gave him infinite jest for that.
Jest.
That's the wrong word. That's right.
It's a good book, though.
Probably cut this out.
No. You should keep that.
I'm gonna keep that.
Yeah.
Infinite crap.
There we go. Yeah, I don't watch the NFL, man. I got
that's fine.
I got other stuff to do.
Sure, and that's
I have to work for you, and for our fans on Sundays.
Which is why I try to speed this up so I can actually watch Red Zone. I think that we're getting into the Jamie segment.
This is definitely the end of a segment.
All right.
If you need a place to stay in Ann Arbor and don't want to be stuck out by I-94, there's a new hotel downtown, and the owners, who should be well-known to the Michigan community, have asked our help to get the word out. The Martin family, yes, that Martin family, recently opened the Residence Inn Ann Arbor downtown, just a block from Main Street and a short walk to Michigan Stadium. They're competitively priced and offer a free hot breakfast, free Wi-Fi, fully equipped kitchen and every suite and an indoor pool. That's the Residence Inn Ann Arbor downtown.
In southeastern Michigan, the yearly cost for a nursing home averages $90,000. It doesn't have to, though. Reed McCarthy founded Ann Arbor Elder Law after handling a tricky situation for his own family. Years of experience later, his boutique firm works with clients across southeast Michigan dealing with Medicaid planning, long-term care, and tax, disability, and family law, not to mention family dynamics. If you have a family member who may need that level of care, or if you're ready to start your own estate plan, Reed can give you a plan for the future. Visit AnnArborElderLaw.com or call 734-945-9693. That's 734-945-9693.
Want the perfect game day outfit? Underground Printing has unique, great-fitting UM apparel and officially licensed apparel from legendary Michigan names like Woodson, Howard, Schembechler, Ufer, and more. UGP also specializes in custom printed apparel and promotional items for groups, events, and businesses. Whether you need one shirt as a gift or 1,000 shirts for a charity walk, Underground can customize almost anything for groups large or small. To learn more, visit Underground Printing at one of our three convenient locations around Ann Arbor or online at undergroundshirts.com.
The places you'll go may seem far from Ann Arbor. From San Francisco to St. Louis to Shanghai. But as members of the Alumni Association, we're never far. Because Michigan is more than a place. It's a mindset that connects us. For those who leave Michigan, but for whom Michigan never leaves, this is where you belong. The Alumni Association of the University of Michigan. Join today at umalumni.com.
I'm coming over. See me down at the station by the lane with my hands in my pocket, jingling a wish coin that I stole from finding out was down on the cares in the world. When I get older, climbing up on the back porch fence just to see the dogs running with the wing and a question and my shivering voices slinging through a crack.
Na, 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 na. I better go it alone.
Mack of JustCoverBlog.com. How you doing, Jamie?
I'm doing well. Just recovering from last night's Penn State-Ohio State game. It's become one of the best games in the country, year in and year out.
One of only four games this week, indeed.
Light schedule. I don't really know how that worked out, and one of them was still a non-conference game between Michigan State and Central Michigan.
I guess we'll start with that one, because I watched a quarter and a half of this until it was clear to me that Central Michigan's quarterback was a little overmatched. So Michigan State wins 31-20. I think it's 31-3 at some point, and then Central Michigan kind of draws closer towards the end of the game. You know, kind of the number that sticks out to me is Michigan State had 4.8 yards of play against Central Michigan, which looks like an absolutely terrible wreck of a football team.
Well, I mean, it's becoming the same old, same old. Actually, really going back to last year, you know, they really, Michigan State, despite the reputation, they're not a good football team running it between the tackles, you know, or with their tailback. I know LJ Scott's been out most of the year, and he was out again yesterday, but, you know, he didn't have great numbers in his first 30 carries this year and wasn't that great last year, but, you know, they just couldn't rush the football, and they dug really deep into their depth chart yesterday. They played a redshirt freshman. I can't remember his name right now, but it was his first few carries of the year there in the second half, just trying to salt the game away.
Yeah, and Lewerke has 185 yards passing, throws a pretty bad pick in the end zone.
And yeah,
really, we're just thinking about now is like, how badly are they sandbagging for the Michigan game?
Yeah, that thought crossed my mind too. I mean, you know, they seems like every game they do a false start, like on third and short, you know, and then they don't convert and have to punt or kick a field goal, and we're like, oh, Michigan State, you know, see, they're not going to commit those penalties against Michigan. Somehow they'll figure out, you know, how to tighten that up. And this game kind of hung in the balance for most of the first half because of procedural penalties in the red zone and then the Lewerke interception in the end zone. So they definitely dropped some points.
Yeah, I was getting kind of pumped up, and then Central Michigan's offense came on the field.
Yeah.
The guy tried to throw three interceptions and then actually threw an interception.
Yeah.
All right.
Where have you gone, Dan LeFever? We could have used you yesterday.
I made that joke in our Slack. I was like,
all right.
How has the school of Dan LeFever been reduced to this? And, I mean, on another day with a good Mac quarterback, this could have been an L, but it was not to be.
I think really the other thing, you know, worth mentioning is Michigan State has kind of had a sneaky amount of injuries so far this year. They really had to shuffle their offensive line, you know, a lot. Cole Schumann finally got back into the lineup for a little bit yesterday, for example, there. But Stewart, one of their big three wide receivers, missed yesterday's game. And then, more importantly, Cody White went out with what looks like a broken wrist, and he's the best receiver of those three. Now, I kind of feel like Lewerke and his passing offense took off as he started to emerge last year. So that could be kind of critical for them going forward.
All right, Indiana 24, Rutgers 17. I saw a tweet online, as most tweets are, about how the DeBoard take the air out of the ball offense in the second half was really something to behold. And I retweeted that tweet so hard.
Yeah.
How's the DeBoard experience, Jamie?
I'm definitely not liking the DeBoard experience the second time around. I can make a case for some good moments the first time around back in the 90s, right? But not so much now here with Indiana. Yeah, speaking of the airlift, they had drives yesterday of 6 minutes and 9 seconds, 5 minutes and 36 seconds, and then they had four others between 3 minutes and 52 seconds and 4 minutes and 22 seconds. There was a stretch in the second half where they possessed the ball for 12 out of 16 game clock minutes over the course of three drives, and they didn't score a point on any of those drives. And that's kind of how Rutgers lingered in this game.
I mean, it's the philosophy, right? It's like, okay, we got the win over Rutgers by 7 points, and is that going to work against teams that have better talent than you, which most teams do? Probably.
Yeah.
I mean, it just seems like it's the wrong fit for what Indiana wants and needs to be.
I mean, if Indiana was some, you know, upperclassman dominated team that was, you know, competing for something of value tuck away a game, but they're a very young team. They need to kind of keep the pedal to the metal, I feel like, you know, going the whole way. You know, it's just such a high level of variance when a team is that, you know, is that young. And those youthful, the youth showed, Stevie Scott, the running back that I've been hyping so far this year, you know, didn't have a very good game, but he had a key fumble around midfield. And Rutgers had a great flea flicker after that, scored a touchdown and cut it within 10. And we didn't see him again, but his replacement was another true freshman.
So this is a team that has a ways to go in terms of like peak roster composition.
Yeah. I think if there's an encouraging thing for Indiana, it's that I think you can make a case that as long as Tom Allen is there, they're going to be fielding competitive defenses, and that's a huge statement to make after what we had seen for the previous generation of football. And we kind of thought that the window might have closed on that because they had a lot of seniors that played the last 2 years on that improved defense, but they've kind of overhauled it back there. They only have two senior starters. One is a fifth-year senior who only had three career starts coming into the game. So, I mean, I think that, the defense can kind of get back to where they has a chance to get back to where they were, stay rather, where they've been. You know, they were in the top half of the Big Ten in a lot of key defensive categories, just nudging in. And I could see them being middle of the pack this year and getting back into the top half, but they have to find a way to develop something on offense. And we could talk about the board, all they want, but, maybe they just need some more talent on that side of the ball. Remember those last few years of Kevin Wilson, NFL running backs, Nate Sudfeld, an NFL quarterback, albeit he's a backup, he's still an NFL roster. Peyton Ramsey's not going near an NFL roster, probably. They had wide receivers they put in the NFL. They had linemen that they put in the NFL. I have a bad feeling that going forward, despite these competitive defenses, combined with the division they're in, the best they could hope for is just to scramble for 6 wins every year.
Yeah, that's kind of how I feel. I mean, does giving up 291 yards to Rutgers encourage you or discourage you? I don't know the answer to that.
Yeah, well, I mean, a little bit of both. There was a long stretch there where Rutgers did nothing and Indiana was able to get what seemed to be a commanding 24-17 halftime lead, and they scored on all 4 of their possessions. But Rutgers went down the field on the opening drive with ease. Indiana's been giving up opening drive scores all year. And then they just couldn't close. Rutgers, still had 3 scoring drives there. And, but that's a young defense. That's them kind of rebuilding on that side of the ball, I think.
Where was our boy, Wop?
Yeah, where's Wop? Yeah, another Freifogel. That's a good name. What's his first name?
Ty
Freifogel? That's great! All their receivers have amazing names.
We have some pretty good receiver names down there in Indiana. We have a Wop. We have a Freifogel.
Westbrook.
Jay Sean Harris.
Oh, yeah. Jay Sean Harris is a good one. I was making it fun.
We have something named Peyton Hendershot.
Whoa!
Yeah. It's got to be like a fullback or a tight end.
Yeah,
that's good.
And we have my guy, Jay Sean Harris. He did not have an impact returning punts at all yesterday, but he actually chipped in with 7 catches for 54 yards and a nice little touchdown catch yesterday. So,
all right. Purdue 42, Nebraska 28. But Nebraska actually outgains Purdue 582 to 516, which says something about Michigan's defensive performance from last week, but maybe not their offensive performance.
Yeah, right. First time all year, Purdue has lost the yards per play stat.
And they get a win, which they were struggling to get for the rest of the year. So yards per play is garbage, everybody. No, it's not true.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Purdue, I think, is kind of an exciting team. They play Illinois next week, so they're going to get to 3-3. And then they got Ohio State and Michigan State. I mean, that Michigan State game, the way Michigan State's been seeing receivers kind of running away from them in the middle of the field so far this year, that could be kind of weird.
Yeah, Rondale
Moore. And then they close with some games I think they can win. They might need to win 3 out of the final 4 to get to a bowl game, Iowa, Minnesota, Indiana. But you know what? They beat those teams 3 out of 4 in November last year to get to a bowl game.
And then the question is, how bad is Louisville? Do they hire Jeff Brohm if they get rid of Petrino? And does that flip George Karlaftis? That's where I'm at right now.
Boy, isn't that an interesting
So now I'm like
development.
I'm like rooting
Cardinals,
for Purdue and against Louisville. That's what I'm doing. That's what's happening.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean,
did you see Scott Frost's
quotes? It felt like he was leaving Purdue last off season, and you know we talked about how it would be great for the league, you know, for him to stay in. But, you know, my rivalry had with Indiana, he wanted
right,
to go.
Yeah.
You know, if they do catch fire down the stretch, and they could, I think they will. I think this offense has obviously taken a year or two leap.
Yeah.
I mean, there's no question about it.
I mean, they're unlucky.
David Blau is, you know, they've got so many of the best things going on offense in the Big Ten. It's incredible. Blau passing the ball in Rondell Moore's hands in any, you know, situation. They have the big play tight end, you know, underrated running backs that they don't use enough. But why use them if Blau? But so much is going on. Somebody has got to grab somebody's attention. And perfect fit, Louisville. And they have cratered in the post-Lamar Jackson era.
Yeah, I was completely fine with Braum making Purdue good until he got a 5-star defensive end I thought Michigan was going to get. And now it's like, got to go.
Right. No.
You had something about Frost's post-game quotes?
I just saw here on the side that it says that he says his team is the most undisciplined team in the country.
Okay. Probably true.
And adds, they look like they love losing.
Oh, get fired up about this one. I mean, this is a year zero.
They're 0-4, though.
I know, it's a year zero. And I just keep going back to this. As soon as they had like an introductory gentle workout, two guys got rhabdo. And is that about Scott Frost or is that about Mike Riley?
Yeah.
It's about Mike Riley.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, totally. Undisciplined team in America, though. I don't know. I mean, Michigan and Ohio State could probably be in that team photo.
But, well, you know, it's about like filling your run
those
lanes.
Those teams are, you know, they like to win.
Yeah, that's true. Speaking of those teams, Ohio State 27, Penn State 26 in the game of the week.
Yeah.
Haskins has 270 yards, but approximately 150 of those are on screens.
Yeah.
So he had a really rough day when he tried to throw downfield. J.K. Dobbins is held to 3.4 yards a carry. Penn State outgains Ohio State by over 100 yards, but they have a series of Franklin-esque fourth down decisions where they're passing up fourth and three, fourth and two.
Yeah.
And then at the very end of this game, after Ohio State takes the lead, they run an inside zone on fourth and five after, I think, three timeouts.
Yeah.
I think it was Penn State took two. So they had three timeouts, which meant that they could have punted and gotten the ball back if they so chosen.
Which is our James Franklin timeouts of the week, because they still had one left.
Right.
But like at that point, it's useless.
If you didn't take your timeouts,
yes,
and then you didn't get the ball back, you could still get the ball back, and right. You only need a field goal. So
yeah.
Just a colossal game management decision. So they take two timeouts. Ohio State takes one timeout. And then James Franklin has the quarterback check twice before running a basic inside zone play that gets stuffed in the backfield. So,
I mean,
he can recruit.
Well, so the thing that I keep thinking about Penn State is we talked about how great Saquon Barkley was the last year or two.
Yep.
And we talked about Joe Moorhead, same thing, all that. Now you look at all of the numbers in this game for Penn State, and it's basically all McSorley. I mean, yeah, KJ Hamler has a good day, and he's hitting wide receivers, but he has a lot of passing yards, and then basically their entire running game was McSorley.
He had 175 yards on the ground.
Right. And Miles Sanders was 16 for 43.
So what happens next year when McSorley
is gone?
Well,
it's just kind of like, did they just have the best offensive coordinator, running back, and quarterback in since the 90s? And that's just kind of what Penn State has been, or is this something that they're building these guys and can go forward? But it just seems like that's a lot of top-end guys right there.
Yeah.
You know, I think in the moment, Sanders didn't make anybody miss all night. I don't know what he saw in any play really that went with Sanders. But you mentioned Saquon Barkley and the offensive coordinator combination. But even with that, these guys gave up so many TFLs in the run game, even against Barkley. Over the course of the last 2 years, I feel like even a fourth and five with a game on the line over the last 2 years, I would rather see McSorley do something with it.
I mean, right?
Than pitch it or inside zone it to Barkley. you know, so like I feel like this whole this it's just like I'm almost speechless at that play call. I mean, it's like wow. And the thing is, this is almost they got completely schooled on that play call. You know, the Ohio State PE, Chase Young, right? Is that his name?
Yes.
You know, the Bosa replacement. You know, he made the play, but you know, he looped around.
Yeah,
he got schooled RPS to use the MGO parlance on that play after three timeouts. So like all of it, just a total disaster.
Speaking of the MGO parlance, I did notice that Gus Johnson called Joe Gaziano the Gaz at one point.
Yes.
Like he had a TFL and he's like, the Gaz!
Did he use the article, the?
He said the Gaz, yeah. I'm like, maybe he got it from us. You never know. Could happen. It is the most basic, dumbest nickname that we could come up with, though, so.
Right.
I think it's fitting.
It is. Well, he's a good player. But yeah, I just, you know, this is the second straight year Penn State has seemingly outplayed Ohio State and lost because of Jane Franklin's bad decisions.
Yeah. And we're just focusing on that one.
Yes.
I mean,
they
you know, he punted twice inside Ohio State's 40-yard line. Yeah, well, the first one was 4th and 9 at the 39.
Even so, that's insane.
First drive of the game. But the second one, you know, fourth quarter, time to seal the game, 4th and 5, Ohio State 37. They actually took a delay, punted it, gained 38 yards in possession, J.K. Dobbins screen, lost it, all back.
Yeah. Well, and that whole final drive for Ohio State,
the announcers would actually mention stuff like that on games, but they never do. Franklin at least said that he would have gone for it in retrospect, but
like they went 80 yards of those 95 yards on screens.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah. The comeback was not like last year's where Barrett was throwing it downfield.
Right.
You know, everywhere in a total maestro performance that you felt coming the whole second half. Ohio State here did nothing, you know, in this game. Their first 14 drives, they had 7 3-and-outs and 9 punts. They only had 5 3-and-outs coming into the game and 13 punts all season. They just went nowhere. And then those final two drives were just nothing but runs after the catch. Short passes, runs after catch. That the first touchdown was just a complete team failure by everybody on Penn State. There were some missed tackles. There were some bad pursuits. It was just terrible.
Well, and the other thing about Ohio State, it feels like their offense is qualitatively different this year because they don't have JT Barrett. So on 3rd and 1, they can't just be like, go get it, JT.
Yeah.
And Haskins doesn't want to run the ball. And, you know, J.K. Dobbins is a good player, but he's not like a 3rd and short kind of guy.
Yeah.
And they don't, for whatever reason, they're not even putting in Mike Weber in these situations. So it's just kind of like they're last year, any 3rd and short or 4th and short, they were just going to convert. And this year, it's a lot more wobbly.
Yeah, you know, Dobbins and Weber ended up getting 100 yards combined, but they had a real, real low yards per carry. And in the past, when those running backs get bottled up, yeah, JT would toss in a 17-carry, buck 09 game to keep everything moving. You're focusing on 3rd and short. I think the other place where they miss his legs is when you would win first down against Ohio State over the last few years with JT, how many times would JT run the ball on 2nd and 9 for like 7 or 8 yards, you know? And sometimes even get the first down because he just found a way to get those sneaky extra yards while you're trying to tackle him. You know, they don't have that element, obviously, with the way it's constituted now. And until the game went haywire for Penn State down the stretch, you know, that was the lead in the narrative coming out of this game, I thought, was how do you miss me now, says JT Barrett, you know?
Probably a bit, but they did win this game because it's James Franklin, an even match for Brady Hoke, but a good recruiter and a guy who can hire other coaches. So he's got that for him, going for him.
You know, they also, at the end of the half, moved the ball to midfield, couldn't convert on a 2nd and 2 and 3rd and 2, and punted on 4th and 2 with 32 seconds to go.
What are we doing here?
I don't know.
All right. Well, that's it. Just 4 games this week, and of course, the Michigan game. I guess we used to ask you for hot takes on the Michigan game, Jamie. Do you have any hot takes on the Michigan game?
Whew, my hot takes. Poor Dan Caron Higdon. I mean, you know, keep punch him into the line on first down, see what happens. Nothing. I feel bad for the kid. I hope he's getting a good hot tub today. But
I'm sure he is.
Just slow starts on the road. It's just been kind of dogging the program for one reason or another for a long time.
20 years.
Yeah, I know, right? Yeah. And you guys probably talked about it, but I thought the stats were so crazy. What, Northwestern gained practically the first 100 yards of the game. They still were up 145-21 in total yardage, and Michigan somehow ended up with like 150 more total yards, but it never really felt like this title wave of offense out of Michigan.
Well, I mean, if they punch in a couple of goal-to-go situations instead of kicking field goals, it does feel more like
that's
that.
That's true. I tell you what, I just don't like field goals of less than 30 yards. I mean, sometimes they're necessary, but, you know, they're just daggers to your heart when you're cheering for that team, right?
Yeah. Especially when you have second goal from the three. It's just like, dude, just Mason. What are you doing in the shotgun? Get out of the shotgun. Mason, fullbacks. That's what I'm talking about. Yeah.
Yeah. But they hung in there. I mean, you know, there were, it was just so sloppy. But you know, when you can overcome that and still win, that's really not a bad sign. And I think a lot of that has to do with the quarterback, you know, who overall had a really good game despite some kind of wobbly moments here and there early on.
Yeah. All right, Jamie, thanks for calling in.
Thank you for listening to the MGO podcast. This is David Nasternak along with Brian Cook. If you give James Franklin time, he will definitely James Franklin.